It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. This portion of the show brought to you by Auric Home Centers. All throughout the St. Louis area, all locally owned and operated. Great vacuum cleaners and so much more at O-R-E-C-K. That spells Auric. I am Paul Harris, Dan Strauss and Ian Geis here with me. And now news director Colin Jeffrey assumes his alter ego as Showbiz Boy. Hello, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing just great. Thank you very much. Before we get to the movies that we have to review, I know I've talked a lot about Amy Schumer's movie Trainwreck, which I think is the funniest movie of the year. And as I said when I first reviewed it, the funniest movie since Chris Rock's Top 5 last year. And I've recommended it to all sorts of people. And my daughter finally went to see it with a friend of hers the other night and loved it. Absolutely loved it. And the next day, I'm talking to my 91-year-old mother. Hi, Mom. What have you been doing lately? Oh, I went to a movie. You did. What did you see? Trainwreck. Have you heard of it?
What?
I said, Mom, you did not go see Amy Schumer's Trainwreck. Yes, I did. She's very funny.
Oh, my gosh. She liked it?
She loved it.
Oh, great.
She loved it as much as my 21 years old, 91 years old. They both loved it. And I actually said to my mother, you know, Mom, I'm surprised because you're not exactly the target demographic for that movie. And she said, oh, honey, I'm 91. I'm not the target demographic for anything. Isn't that perfect?
Yes.
So it's apparently a movie for all ages, R-rated, though, so 17 and older. All right, what do you got for us this week, Colin?
Right. I saw two movies this week, which is a rarity. I very rarely get to go see two movies. I saw movies on the opposite ends of the spectrum. Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
This is now their third shot at a Fantastic Four movie. And Shaun the Sheep.
That's the zombie movie.
Yes. Shaun of the Sheep. Yes. No, this is a family-friendly movie. It's by Aardman Animation, which you may not know the name, but you know their work. They did Chicken Run back before we hated Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
They did Wallace and Gromit, the TV series. There's a Shaun the Sheep TV series. They did Curse of the Were-Rabbit. They do stop-motion animation.
Okay.
And they continue doing stop-motion animation.
And everybody has big cheeks.
Yeah, they're fluffy, they're gentle-looking. If you're not familiar with Shaun the Sheep, his mouth is kind of on the side of his head, so when he needs to talk or make noise, it's you see like teeth come out to the side.
Was he like a gangster talking out of the side of his mouth like that?
Well, there's no dialogue. It's important. There's no dialogue in these Shaun the Sheep the movie. It is they just kind of make noise, even the humans, but you can tell what they're saying. So this is 85 minutes. It came out on Wednesday.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah. Just like that. 85 minutes came out on Wednesday and has been disappointing at the box office so far. I really, really like this movie.
Yeah?
A lot.
Family movie?
100%. And you are going to laugh if you have a soul. I mean, this is one of these movies where your kids will laugh at some things and you'll be like, oh, isn't that cute? And there are things that are going to go way over their head, namely a very obtuse Breaking Bad reference.
Okay.
not kidding. It's in there. Your kids are going to have no clue, and you're going to recognize it instantly.
Is there dialogue that you can understand in this movie?
There's no words. There's a couple songs that play that have real words, but there's no dialogue other than that. You know exactly what is happening every moment, and it helps that Shaun is a spectacular artist, and when you really need to know something, he can just draw it.
Sounds to me like an episode of Two and a Half Men on mute. You don't have to hear it to know exactly what's going on
except
the screen.
Funny. Yeah. Legitimately funny. You're going to laugh. Your kids are going to laugh. It's endearing. The animation, it works so well because kids love the look of it, and every adult is nostalgic on some level for stop-motion animation.
How come it's not doing well at the box office?
Because I think there's a large group of people out there that have kids that never watched the show, and they don't know what it is.
A show like that?
Yes. The show is now 8 years old and ran for several seasons.
I've never heard of it.
Again, that's the problem. I don't think most people are aware.
Yeah, but your daughter's 18.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if the show's 8 years old... Well, she would have been 10.
But it's another one of these.
This show's really for the 91-year-old demo.
Oh, okay.
There was another movie I reviewed not that long ago that the main characters couldn't speak. and it muddled it. There was just action all over the place, and it was nonstop just stupidity. It was my least favorite movie of the year thus far, Minions.
Yeah.
This is the opposite end of this. I can't stress, you're going to know exactly what's happening. You're going to laugh, even though no one speaks.
Okay.
I highly encourage you to see this. I think right now the best, if not the best movie of the year, but the front runner for Best Picture is Inside Out.
Mm-hmm.
I think this might be a better sort of pure animated movie.
Wow.
But not a better movie overall.
Okay.
If that, this is very much an animated movie. Doesn't try to do anything other than tell this cute, fun story. Your characters are never in, like, horrible peril. There's nothing that your kids could have nightmares about in here. So,
would there be any reason for an adult to see this who doesn't take a child?
If you look back fondly on Wallace and Gromit, if you watched those, if you liked that, if go see it. Yeah, I mean, if you know, late 20s, early 30s, and even I think into the 40s, people remember Wallace and Gromit, not necessarily in its original run, but seeing it at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, that's perfectly acceptable. Okay. It's not quite the same date movie as Inside Out because it's really simple. But I have difficulty recommending you see this movie in theaters because there's no dialogue. I mean, there's just, it's tough to say, go pay $13 a ticket to see a movie that there's nothing added by seeing it on the big screen other than sharing the experience with people around you. So,
So
that's why it might be trouble.
On a scale of 10?
This is 8.
Wow.
This is an 8. I really liked it.
Shaun the Sheep, it's called?
Shaun the Sheep.
All right.
It will be the one. And they did a great job advertising this. The movie posters look so serious. It's Shaun standing there almost like James Bond. And instead of a gun, he's got the shears because he's a sheep. And so just cute. It's clever. Yeah. And it's very British in its sensibilities.
Okay. I had not heard of it at all. So
it only made 800,000 so far. So
we probably have told people about a movie that they would not have known about. So that's good. Movie I'm reviewing this week is called Ricky and the Flash, which is the new Meryl Streep movie. This is the movie that proves yet again that Meryl Streep can do anything she wants. Doesn't always work, but she can do anything she wants. In this movie, she plays a woman by the name of Ricky Rondozzo. That's her stage name because she's the leader of a rock and roll cover band in Tarzana, California, called The Flash. She's the lead singer. And the lead guitarist, who she's dating, is played by Rick Springfield. Now, when I went to see this the other night, my wife went to the screening with me, and she actually made this sound.
Oh, Rick Springfield?
Yeah, from General Hospital.
Yeah, did you do that when you saw Meryl?
No. Yeah. Well, I like Meryl Streep, and she's fine.
You pointed at the screen and went,
I know exactly what you're saying. Now, I just wanted to give you a little side note about the band The Flash, Ricky and The Flash. She's Ricky, and the band is called The Flash. There are two musicians in this who are real-life famous band members. One is a guy by the name of Joe Vitale, who is a drummer that worked on pretty much all of the important session recordings for rock bands in the late 60s and early 70s, like Crosby, Stills, Nash, and the Eagles, and Linda Ronstadt. He was the drummer on a huge number of those. And in fact, he's the drummer on the first Crosby, Stills, and Nash album, the one that had Sweet Judy Blue Eyes and so many other hits on it. And then the keyboard player in it is a guy named Bernie Worrell, who, again, has done a lot of studio work, but also was in bands that George Clinton ran. Remember Parliament and Funkadelic?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you wouldn't expect, get me the drummer from Crosby, Stills, and Nash and the organ player from P-Funk.
Yeah.
Well, they're both in this, and their names in the movie are Joe and Bernie. I think sometimes, as you know, a lot of musicians, maybe when you hire musicians, it's a good idea. Just name them their name.
Yes.
So they know who they are in the script. And they're fine. And the music is fine. Here's the plot of the movie. Ricky, played by Meryl Streep, is broke. She's the leader of this cover band at a bar in Tarzana. And they've been playing there as the house band for years and years and years. During the day, she works as a cashier at Total Foods, not Whole Foods, because we can't use that name. Yeah, but it looks exactly the same as a Whole Foods on the inside, and she's a board cashier there. She is originally from Indianapolis, and had a husband and three kids there, but had left that all behind to move to Los Angeles to chase fame when she was in her 20s and early 30s. And now she's in her 60s, and she's still a rocker, you know? And you know she's a rocker because she wears a leather jacket and lots of rings. That's how, okay, in a movie you know that you're a rocker.
Mm-hmm. She had the haircut, too?
She has multiple braids on one side of her head. Yeah, so the
she's like a college kid that went to spring break in Mexico and got their hair braided.
Yeah, or
and
like
never came back.
Or like the kind of person who would have moved to California 40 years ago to try to get into the rock and roll business and meet Joe Vitale and Bernie Worrell.
Mm-hmm.
So she left the family behind, and now she gets a call from her ex, Pete, who's played by St. Louis's own Kevin Klein, who calls to say that their daughter had tried to commit suicide. And he wants her to come to Indianapolis and, you know, be there for her. And Meryl Streep's completely broke, but she scrounges some money together, and she gets on a plane, and she flies to Indianapolis. And Kevin Klein lives in a gated community in a kind of semi-mansion, and he's obviously done very, very well, and he's remarried. His new wife is played by Audra McDonald. And the daughter, who tried to commit suicide, is played by an actress named Mamie Gummer, who happens to be Meryl Streep's real-life daughter.
Hmm.
And she's good. She's not Meryl Streep great, but she's good in the movie. The problem becomes, once Meryl Streep gets there, it almost becomes a formulaic, standard Hollywood movie about the parent who had to leave to go off and do business and then came home and is estranged from the family. And there are two other kids I mentioned. One is a straight son who's about to get married, and the other one is a gay son who's offended by her homophobia. And so she's the outsider who's got to come in, the fish out of water, who's got to be there and be there for her daughter, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so it sounds like a little bit of a Lifetime movie, doesn't it? Well, it is. And the performances are not good, except for Meryl Streep, who gives it her all. Learned how to play guitar to be,
wow,
to be the guitarist in this movie and the lead singer, and she has a voice and always has. But Kevin Klein is just kind of walking through the movie. He's never asked to do much of anything, and he doesn't do much of anything. The script is by Diablo Cody, who did Juno. You hate her?
I hate her.
You didn't like Juno?
I hated Juno.
Oh, I liked Juno, and I liked another movie that she did with Charlize Theron called Young Adult. I've not liked anything else that Diablo Cody has done, and I did not like her script for this.
She feels like she's pretending to be a writer. Like, oh, what I'm going to say is so deep in this movie, and it just, it all falls flat.
Well, the problem with this is she got lazy. There are things in it, in the script, that are a little bit too easy. For instance, Meryl Streep is there, and she walks into this house that Kevin Klein lives in, and they walk into the kitchen, and it's, you know, just like a town and country kind of house, and so the kitchen is gigantic, and it's got a sub-zero refrigerator built into the wall, and she opens it up, and she's looking through the refrigerator part. Oh, look at all these things, and it's all kinds of she-she food, and she opens up the freezer part, and she finds a bag of pot in there.
Whoa.
Well, you know, there's an old saying that if somebody writes a play and you're shown a gun in Act 1, mm-hmm, the gun is going to go off in Act 2. Well, you know that when Meryl Streep finds that in the first 45 minutes of the movie, that later on, she and Kevin Klein are going to open that up and start smoking it, and we're going to have the funny scene of middle-aged stoned people giggling. Well,
like,
of course.
It's complicated.
But yes, that's what you get later on. Mm-hmm. That's what you get in all of these kind of movies. So it's that predictable and that lazy. And the direction, I was very disappointed in the way this movie was directed, because the director is Jonathan Demme, who did Silence of the Lambs,
mm-hmm,
and also did the Talking Heads concert movie called Stop Making Sense, which is one of the best rock concert movies ever filmed. So he knows how to do that. And he gets the scenes of Meryl Streep and her band playing in this bar in Tarzana, California. They're good. They're shot well. The problem is we see the full song of almost every song that she sings there. And I think that might include 5 or 6 full songs, 3.5, 4.5 minute long songs. Now, the movie is only 1.5 hours. So if you think 25 minutes of that is taken up by her singing with the band, you got about a 60 or 70 minute movie left over, and there just isn't all that much there. The songs are in there as filler. I wonder what could have been cut out of this movie that made him decide to put those in. There must have been some bad stuff that he left behind. There's one part of this movie that I did admire. And by the way, when I walked out of this, I said, well, you know what? It wasn't great. It wasn't horrible. The more I thought about it, the more I soured on the movie, except for one scene. And that's the scene in which she confronts the family that obviously is looking down on her because she left the husband and kids behind years ago. And she says, you know, this really isn't fair because I went off to have a rock and roll career. And if you look at men who have done this, and she mentions, for example, look at Mick Jagger. He's got 7 different kids by 4 different women. He left them all behind to go off and be in the Rolling Stones. And nobody says anything about him, which is a fairly good point, although I would bet that the kids along the way and the exes along the way have had something to say about that. Mm-hmm. And also, by the way, you're not in the Rolling Stones. You're in a cover band in Tarzana, California, and have been for about 30 years or so.
Making no money.
Making no money at all.
Yeah.
So that's why she's broke. Now, is it okay to excuse Mick Jagger but not to excuse Ricky Randozzo? Well, probably not. I could see the argument. But the rest of the world doesn't really care about that. The outside world doesn't care about, you know, Billy Joel now getting married for the 4th time and his ex-wives or Rod Stewart having all the, or any rock star or pop star, what goes on with them and how they treat their family, unless it gets into TMZ. It's not really a story. And if it is, it's because that person's famous. This woman's not famous. And, you know, the family's still a little bit bitter about, especially the kids are bitter 20, 30 years later about her leaving them behind. So there's something there. The problem is that Diablo Cody didn't write the script about that. That central idea is not played up enough. And one last thing that bugs me about this, because we live in the Midwest, and the parts of the movie that take place in Indianapolis kind of have that coastal attitude about Midwesterners. And here's what's wrong. As I mentioned, she walks around in a leather jacket and lots of rings, and she's got kind of a rock and roll look, the same way a modern-day Joan Jett walks around. Mm-hmm. She still looks the way she did when she was 30 years old, but still wears, you know, the tight leather pants and the leather jacket.
Yeah.
But because the scenes are in Indianapolis, Indiana, whenever Meryl Streep goes around in that outfit, everybody around her is looking at her like she's a freak. Like nobody in Indiana knows how to rock.
Oh,
like
yeah.
John Mellencamp isn't from Indiana and dresses exactly that way.
Yeah.
It's not 1962 in Indiana. It's 2015 when this movie takes place. It's, again, lazy writing and lazy directing. And I was originally, when I walked out of that theater, going to give it a 5 because it was not good, not bad. I've soured on it. I give it a 2.5.
Oof, that's rough.
Which is probably going to put it on my top 10 worst of the year.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question before we get to your last movie. Are we in the doldrums of summer? Is August the summer equivalent of February and January?
Yeah, it's probably worse. It's probably worse.
Well, at least in January, we get the movies that were released, the big movies that were released elsewhere to be up for Oscar stuff at the end of December. They don't open here in many cases until January. So it's really February where we get into that blah period.
Oh, yeah.
And August is the same?
Kids are going back to school. We get that for a little while here. But what makes it worse, in my opinion, is you get movies that they thought might be blockbusters, but then they saw how they were coming together and they said, oh, let's dump it in August. So it's still sort of people like, oh, yeah, let's go see something big. But these are the bad blockbusters.
Okay, now does your movie, Fantastic Four, fit in with that description?
Oh, yes.
All right.
So if you're not familiar with Fantastic Four, this was the first comic, superhero comic by Marvel. This is what the entire Marvel universe is built around.
Okay.
Problem is Marvel Studios, the group that's putting together all of the movies that are universally liked, and some of the biggest movies ever, does not have this. This is Sony trying for the third time to start the Marvel franchise. You remember, may remember there were a couple Marvel movies about 10 years ago. They were not good. They weren't bad, but they were not good.
So is the stuff that we see that's got Iron Man and the Avengers, is that DC?
No, that's Marvel.
That's Marvel.
But that is okay. That is owned by Marvel, which is owned by Disney. This is Sony owns, had the rights to this Marvel property before Disney started gobbling them all up and Marvel started eating all of them.
Okay.
It's the same thing that happened with Spider-Man. That's why Spider-Man is now going to be in the Marvel Universe moving forward because they agreed to buy essentially the rights to use him from Sony.
Okay. So who are the Fantastic Four?
The Fantastic Four are a group of four scientists, and they are taken to another dimension and gain powers, cosmic powers. So you have Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic. He can expand in any direction, essentially limitlessly. You have Johnny Storm, who is the Human Torch. He can light his entire body on fire, fireballs.
That is very useful.
Well, he can
also
fly.
How many times I thought to myself, wow, right now would be a good time to be on fire.
Well,
great friend to have for a s'more party.
That's right.
He can fly. There's Sue Storm.
Wait a minute. Jimmy brought the weed. Nobody brought a lighter? Get the torch boy over here.
Yeah. Yeah, just...
Okay,
that's sort of why it works, though. Sue Storm, who's... I always want to say Miss Invisible, but she might be the invisible girl. But she can turn invisible. She can create force fields. She's kind of cool. And then we've got Ben Grimm, who becomes the Thing. He's a rock monster.
Oh, yeah, that big rock guy.
What's the difference between that and the Hulk?
Well, he's always a rock guy. He's permanently disfigured. And
he doesn't turn back into a human being when he calms down?
He's always a rock guy and, yeah, lives a horrible life. The point of this is none of them have an overwhelming...
You know what? If he's a rock guy and he wants to live a miserable life, he should go see Ricky in the Flash. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's all right. The point is none of them have an overwhelming power. They have to work together in order to be at their best. This is another origin story. It starts off when young Reed Richards is a kid and he decides he wants to invent a teleporter as a kid. And so Ben Grimm, who's kind of a... Lunkhead helps him along, and then it shows him growing up, and there's a science fair, and he actually teleports a little model airplane to what he thinks is somewhere else in the world. But the scientist and Sue Storm, who's also about a high school-aged kid, show up, and they say, no, it's actually another dimension. We want you to come study at the Baxter Institute. So he goes there, and together, they work together with a former student, Victor Von Doom, to create a teleporter.
Victor Von Doom.
Your mic wasn't even on, and we could hear.
You know what? When your name is Victor Von Doom, you are pretty much guaranteed to be in the evil business, right?
Yes. He's from the horrible Eastern European country of, I think, Latveria.
Oh, God.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Your name is Victor Von Doom, and you do what? Oh, I own an ice cream parlor. You never hear that.
No.
Unless it's a front for the evil group. Yeah.
Oh, I groom dogs. So those are the main characters. They build this teleporter. They go to the alternate dimension. And when they're there, it's the most boring alternate dimension.
Even more boring than Tomorrowland?
Yes.
Wow.
Because... they are going there, I guess, to harness energy so that they can bring energy back to this world because we're running out of energy.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
So their whole idea is let's go find a way to keep our cars running. And we're going to go to this alternate dimension and strip mine it and bring that back to Earth.
That sounds like a perfectly sane plan to me.
It does. Well, when they're there, they uncover this green power that I don't know. Green power.
Let's just stop for just a second here. I have to explain something to our audience. Colin, showbiz boy here, is totally Mr. Comic-Con.
Yes.
You've never been to Comic-Con, have you?
No.
No, but you want to. You've wanted your entire life to go. Because Comic-Con is the world of comic books, superheroes, and science fiction.
Yes.
And this is right up Colin's alley. And so when he says, and there's some green stuff and... I don't know. That means that it's a bad, bad movie.
You don't care enough to even...
Yeah, bad green stuff.
Colin couldn't figure out what the green stuff was in a comic book movie.
Is this a true story?
Yes, it is.
Yes. Oh. Well, the green stuff, it captures Victor Von Doom. He disappears. And everyone else manages to make it back. When they come back, they've been imbued with these special powers. So now they have them.
Okay.
And ordinarily, this wouldn't be bad if we were 20 minutes into the movie. The problem is we're an hour into the movie when all this happened. So it's felt like an hour of prologue. And then they come back, and the government wants to weaponize them, and and everyone allows this to happen. And it's just bad. They've got these powers, and you never really see them. And then there's this final confrontation, And if you're familiar with comic book movies, you may have seen the Green Lantern with Ryan Reynolds mm-hmm. that had this huge buildup and then maybe a five-minute fight. There's a three-and-a-half-minute fight to round out this movie. And you walk out of the movie and you're just like, what happened?
Wow.
This was doomed from
Victor
the beginning.
Von Doomed.
Victor Von yes. Doomed. His name is Dr. Doom. That's what he becomes. He's
of course
a horrible
it does.
Villain.
Yeah.
Well, they just do this tongue-in-cheek thing three-quarters of the way through the movie when they're still working to build this. And Sue Storm, played by Kate Mara, looks at him and says, he's talking about how this won't work, and she says, you're a real Dr. Doom. And it's just like, this is horrible.
There's some clever writing right there.
It's so bad.
Well, now, I have to ask you about a story I saw today about the director of this movie.
Yes, that's where I was going next.
Okay. Josh Trank, the director of this movie, is trashing the movie on opening weekend.
Yes. So Josh Trank broke onto the scene directing a found footage sort of origin story of superheroes and bad guys called Chronicle. If you haven't seen it, you should. It's very good for what it is. It's dark and moody before that became popular. I really liked it quite a bit. Everyone thought, oh, he's great. He's this young director. It was his first film. Since then, he has not been able to really do much. He was supposed to direct one of these standalone Star Wars films, but they heard how badly Fantastic Four was going and fired him. He says he left. He got fired mm-hmm. because someone who was working on Fantastic Four is also a producer on these Star Wars movies, and it was just nonsensical.
Now, here's what I saw in the story that I read about this morning.
Yes.
He has denied reports that his erratic behavior and messy dogs caused drama during the filming.
I don't know what messy dogs means.
I think that he actually had dogs.
He had dogs on the set, and they were pooping and peeing everywhere.
And he wasn't
probably.
Cleaning up after them.
Yeah.
How often do you hear about that? Yeah, we're making a $150 million movie. Please bring your dogs right onto the set.
That's all right. Leave that in the movie.
And this movie had all the hallmarks of being troubled. It was supposed to have a 3D conversion. They scrapped that. Then it was supposed to have press showings early on. They scrapped that, and they instituted an embargo, a review embargo, until today or yesterday, really, because the movie came out.
Now, he says that the studio recut this after they fired him. He says, a year ago, I had a fantastic version of this, and it would have received great reviews, but you'll probably never see it.
That's what he says. The problem is he was involved in the film until its release. Like, it's not as if they fired him from it. He was involved in this. He can say that the studio overreach, and that's very possible because Sony wants this to be a home run so they can sell it for more to Marvel or keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a home run. It feels like a prologue for a sequel. This feels like what should have been about 20 or 25 minutes leading into a movie. They instead stretched out to almost 2 hours, and it is bad. It is bad from start to finish.
Is it so bad that it won't win the box office this weekend?
It might still, just because. Yeah, the only other movie that's out there that's really a threat is Mission Impossible. I will say this. Miles Teller plays Reed Richards. Michael B. Jordan plays Johnny Storm, the Human Torch. And Kate Mara plays Sue Storm. These three do good work in it. You can't lay any of the blame. They're not even like overacting things. They did a good job in this. This is writing. It had five or six writers attached to it. This is directing. This is everything but their fault. So I give it a 3 out of 10. I give each of them a point and nothing else. Like, everything else is bad about this movie.
Okay.
And it is frustratingly bad.
So you said they're already planning a sequel. What if it tanks?
They may not. I mean, they may just sell it off to Marvel and see what Marvel can do with a Fantastic Four. It's bad.
Why don't they make it the Fantastic Five for the sequel? That would be cool. And then add somebody else.
Get Vanessa Von Doom, his
there
sister.
You go.
Yeah.
Movie, comic book fans already weren't happy with the direction of this. If you added a fifth one to the Fantastic Four, they might have an aneurysm. That would cause people to stroke out.
How does this compare to Ant-Man? Because I don't hear
much about
don't hear much about Ant-Man.
This is better than Ant-Man.
Oh, by quite a... No, this is... Ant-Man's much better, sorry.
Oh.
Ant-Man's fun. There's fight scenes that are neat. Ant-Man is fun. You're going to laugh. This, you almost laugh twice in the movie just because you need to laugh to cut the tension of how bad it is. Movie screenings, we've been to a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're 90, 95% full.
Mm-hmm.
This was maybe a third full.
Wow.
So this is not a good sign. They did so bad they didn't give away tickets to the public. Like, they just said, reviewing press only, please. So this has all the hallmarks of being one of the biggest stinkers of the year, but I feel bad for Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, and Kate Mara because they did nothing to deserve this.
What was the budget on this? Over $100 million,
I think it's $150.
And not going to make it back?
Probably will worldwide, but what you have it needs to make to be profitable, probably $300 to $350 million. That's going to be a stretch.
Wow.
That's going to be a big stretch.
All right, Colin, we'll catch you in the newsroom in about 20 minutes.
Sounds good.
Colin Jeffrey, Showbiz Boy, here every Friday afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon here on the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris, Ian Geist, Dan Strauss, thank you for listening. We just finished up the Showbiz segment with Colin Jeffrey. I actually have a couple of other showbiz stories I want to mention. One is that if you are an Amazon Prime user, you might know that you get free video in that. You don't get all of the stuff that Amazon has, but they've been doing a lot of original programming. Started a couple of years ago with a John Goodman political show, and then last year they got up a lot of attention for a show called Transparent about Jeffrey Tambor playing a middle-aged man who is transgender and wants to be known as a woman. From that point on, got a whole bunch of Emmy Awards, Emmy Award nominations anyway. And today, they're debuting a couple of new pilots. And the way Amazon does this is they put the pilots out there and you can watch it and you get to vote and you literally have a say in whether that goes to series. And so the pilot, I'm looking forward to this one. I'm going to watch it. It debuts today. It's from Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad. And it's called Sneaky Pete. It stars Giovanni Ribisi as a con man who was in prison with a guy named Pete, and now he's out, and he's impersonating Pete, and is trying to trick the real Pete's grandparents, played by Margot Martindale and Peter Geraghty, into believing that he is Pete. Now, I don't know why, because I've only seen a 30-second trailer for this, but I'm assuming it's because they have money, and he wants some of it. But pretty clear from the trailer that Grandma's got her doubts. And so it plays out from there. And then Bryan Cranston is actually in the pilot as a guy who wants some money back from this con man who stole it from him. And things aren't looking good for him. And it looks really intriguing and well shot. And it has kind of a Breaking Bad kind of look to it. Again, I've only seen 30 seconds of this. But it's out today if you have Amazon Prime or you have access to Amazon Video. You might want to check that out. It's called Sneaky Pete. And then another story I have for you is about a documentary that's going to air on Spike TV Monday night about Chris Farley, the big fat guy from Saturday Night Live who died, 32, 33, something like that, yes. very much like John Belushi. It's called I Am Chris Farley. I was never a Chris Farley fan. I kind of liked it when he did the silly interview with Paul McCartney on there. Remember when you were in the Beatles? Wasn't that great?
Yeah.
That was funny. And I also liked it when he did the Chippendales routine with Patrick Swayze. But that's the only two things I remember him being in that were funny. The rest of it was just, oh, I'm fat and I'm sweaty, and look at how much I'm sweating because I'm fat. That was every Chris Farley sketch, as far as I could see. Here's what I did not know. 14 years ago, Chris Farley was the original voice of Shrek.
Really?
Yes. And he had completed almost all of his dialogue for the movie before he died. But he hadn't done all of it.
Oh, wow.
So the people who were making the movie, I guess it was DreamWorks, they said, well, what are we going to do? We're not going to get somebody to imitate him. And so instead they hired another guy from Saturday Night Live, Mike Myers, who had had a hit already with Austin Powers at that point and was pretty well known. So they hired him, and you may remember Mike Myers did kind of a Scottish accent for Shrek.
Yeah.
And the combination of him and Eddie Murphy made that movie a monster success.
Yes.
Well, now, with this documentary coming out on Monday night, they found the audio of Chris Farley doing it. And it's online now with just the sketches. You don't see the full animation, but just the storyboards, they're called, of those scenes. I grabbed some of that audio. Listen to this. Now, this is the original Eddie Murphy audio. And when you do cartoon stuff like animated stuff like this, the other actors aren't in the room with you. You do your stuff separately. So Chris Farley was not with Eddie Murphy, which actually makes this even more amazing when you listen to the interplay, how good they both are at pretending that they're having a conversation because the conversation actually overlaps like it would in real life. But listen to this. This is Chris Farley as Shrek.
Man, there's nothing like a fire and a noble romantic mission to warm the cockles of your heart.
Yeah. I like my cockles room temperature, thank you very much.
Hey, if you're not doing this for cockle warming, why are you doing it?
Simple. Fartwad gets his princess, I get what I want.
Which is? Now, come on, what do you want?
I don't have time to set it to music.
Oh, this is another one of those onion things.
No, this is one of those drop it and leave me alone things.
Well, why don't you want to talk about it?
Why do you want to talk about it?
Why are you answering the question with a question?
Why are you asking questions I don't want to answer?
Why are you blocking?
I'm not blocking.
Then why do you have problems expressing your wants?
I don't. I want you to shut up. See? No problem.
You're just displacing your anger.
So the whole thing goes on for about 2.5 minutes. I don't want to play the whole thing for you. But I think it's interesting because I can hear in my head Mike Myers doing that voice of Shrek, which is 10 times more entertaining.
I think so.
So what's the difference, Dan?
I don't know. I think it sounded like Mike Myers was more up and I don't know, into the part more, maybe.
Like maybe Chris Farley was just kind of...
I think he was trying to be too serious. He was trying to be too serious. He's great as a buffoon and doing goofy things. And
not so much with the serious
Yeah,
stuff.
I don't know. He was being really serious.
What do you
think,
Ian?
There were... I think that was a serious scene, though, I think, where, you know, from what I remember that. But I think we know Shrek now, as I hear hearing any other voice, you wouldn't think would be as good because you've already...
But I wonder if we had seen the movie with Chris Farley's voice in it, if it would have been as much of a hit.
Oh, I think so. I think the movie, I think the voice, too.
Oh, I see. I think Mike Myers made that movie.
Too.
I mean, Eddie Murphy was great in that, and maybe the last great thing Eddie Murphy... Well, maybe Dreamgirls. But Mike Myers was so extremely good as Shrek, I think that that's what made that movie go over the top. It was a good movie. It would have been a good movie with Chris Farley. It was a great movie with Mike Myers.
Yeah.
So that documentary airs on Spike TV this Monday night.